Welcome to the Christchurch London podcast. This is a talk from our Covent Garden service. To find out about upcoming talks at each of our services, or to listen to other talks, please visit christchurchlondon.org.
And today we're going to be looking at that question in the concept of interpersonal relationships. What does it mean to live in peace in relationships, and what role can forgiveness play in that? I think one of the tricky things when we talk about forgiveness is actually that we use the term so often, especially in a religious setting. And as we do that, it means that we can actually forget what forgiveness means, how it comes about, what underpins it, what does it mean to seek forgiveness, and what does it mean to grant forgiveness? So that's really the kind of questions that we're going to be asking when we talk about it today. And as we do that, I think we're going to find that the roots of forgiveness lie in relationship breakdown, in pain, and forgiveness is a tool to deal with that kind of pain. So if we turn to the beginning, so literally the beginning. So why do we ever need to forgive? So if we look right at the beginning in Genesis 1 and 2, when the Bible speaks about how God created the world, forgiveness wasn't in it. And the reason forgiveness wasn't in it was relationship breakdown wasn't in it. There's a sense in which when God created the world, humanity lives at peace with one another. And more than that, humanity lives at peace with God, and humanity lives at peace with nature as well. There is a sense of harmony. But sadly, this lasts for two short chapters, and there are many more which come after it in the Bible. And in Genesis 3, we see sin or the fall enter into the world. And really what I understand by that is there's a sense of separation. There's a sense of separation between God and humanity, but there's actually a sense of separation within me as well. There seems to be some kind of gap between the Ed I want to be and the Ed I find myself presently. But there's also a sense of separation between us. There's a sense in which I suddenly have the capacity to hurt you. And I think that's generally because of my selfishness, my inauthenticity. But also I act in such a way that the otherness and difference that I see in you, that otherness and difference which is meant to bring me closer to myself, that engaging with compassion and love in who you are as someone distinct from me, instead I see that as something to be feared. And that produces a pain, and that produces a pain which needs forgiveness. So, and we see that already in Genesis 4 in one of the first stories of the Bible. So all of our images today are brought from the Brick Testament. It's a bank holiday Monday. I would encourage you to familiarize yourself with it tomorrow. So if we go to the next slide, we have the story of Cain and Abel. So Genesis 4, 4 to 9 reads, "And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it.' Now Cain said to his brother Abel, 'Let's go out to the field.' While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him." It's potentially the least narrative build-up you have to a murder. But in it, I think we see three things in this short story. One, we see an otherness and a difference. We then see a pain, and then we see a relationship breakdown. And really, this is a story of what happens without forgiveness, what happens when our pain can't be dealt with. So the otherness and difference is seen in the way that God reacts to the offering. So Abel perceives some kind of difference between himself and Cain. Sorry, Cain perceives some kind of difference between himself and Abel. But significantly, when we look at God's reaction, that's not in God's eyes. God says to him, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted?" There is a sense in which if Cain is just Cain, if he does what is right, if he enacts who he is, then he is right, he is accepted, and he is beloved by God. But by comparing himself with Abel, by that fear of difference taking hold of him, there is a pain. He is downcast and he is angry. And without that pain given an outlet, it leads to the most stark relationship breakdown imaginable, which is murder. And Cain's reaction later on in this chapter is really interesting because he says to God, "I can't go out into the wilderness, for surely I will be killed." And there's a sense in which Cain knows the laws by which he's living, the way he's living without forgiveness, through a fear of difference which causes a death of the other, he's inviting murder on himself. There's a kind of cycle of violence and victimhood which without forgiveness and without any way of dealing with our pain in relationship, it invites. So really, what we're going to look at for the rest of this afternoon is how do we deal with that pain? Because I think if we can deal with that pain, then actually forgiveness is quite a natural outworking. And when we look at Jesus on the cross, we'll see that actually the dealing with pain and healing of pain and forgiveness go hand in hand. But before I do that, I want to say something which I feel is really important, which is that I don't know your context, and I can't tell you what to do. And really, the only thing that I'm trying to do in this talk is really give a framework or principles of something that I see as helpful and that might be helpful to you. So when I was preparing this, I read The Book of Forgiveness by Desmond and Mpho Tutu. And it was really helpful for me, and we'll talk about it a bit later, especially when we go into the practical application of it. But in it, they write this passage, which I just want to echo before we start. If you are standing before me beaten and bleeding, I cannot tell you to forgive. I cannot tell you to do anything, since you are the one who was beaten. If you are the person who has lost the loved one, if a partner betrayed you, if you were abused as a child, if you have endured any of the myriad of injuries humans can inflict upon one another, I cannot tell you what to do. But I can tell you that it all matters. Whether we love or we hate, whether we help or we harm, it all matters. I can tell you that I hope if I am the one who is beaten and bloodied, I will be able to forgive and pray for my abuser. I hope that I will be able to recognize him as my brother and as a precious child of God. I hope I never give up on the reality that every person has the capacity to change. So I humbly echo those words at the start of this, and with no irony intended, if there's anything which is said which is unhelpful, then I ask for your forgiveness. But before we go to look at pain and how we forgive in more detail, let's just take a moment to pray. Lord our God, we want to thank you that you are with us here this afternoon. Lord, we pray, soften our hearts. Lead us deeper into the love that you have prepared for us and the identity that you have waiting for us. Lord, I pray these words help people into that. And anything which is not of you, I pray, is forgotten instantly. Lord, we pray these things in your name. Amen. So the passage that we're going to be exploring today, which is on the next slide, is the resurrection of Lazarus. And it's an odd passage to choose from to talk about forgiveness, principally because the word forgiveness doesn't appear in it at all. Nor is there a relationship breakdown, nor is there a sense of any wrong done against someone. But it does have a lot to say about pain. And I think, like I've said already, understanding that pain is key to understanding the nature of forgiveness. So I think by understanding pain and God's response to that, and especially how Jesus sits with us in that pain, we'll get an insight into what forgiveness is and what the forgiveness that Jesus offers is as well. So if we go, thank you. So this is John 11, 17 to 43. It's quite long, but actually that'll help make an illustrative point later as well. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, and they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. We just go to the next slide. So I think there are 4 points to make about this passage, and really to use Lazarus's death and resurrection as a metaphor for understanding pain and the healing that comes of it. So the first is that it's really interesting that Jesus doesn't prevent Lazarus's death. And I think Jesus doesn't prevent the pain which comes of it. So both Martha and Mary come to him and say, if you were here earlier, you could have prevented this. And there's a temptation within church, and I think within religion in general, of imagining that living life with Jesus almost makes us invulnerable to pain and will lead to a life without pain. But when we look at the life of Jesus, it's not one which is absent of pain, but one of full of love. And when we see Jesus weeping, the passage says that the crowd call out, look how he loved Lazarus. And there's a sense in which the life that Jesus lived, which is full of love, is actually the same life which makes him vulnerable to pain. And I want to suggest that actually the love that Jesus calls us into is one that makes us more vulnerable to pain because it allows us to love more deeply. And Jesus weeps. So Jesus might not provide a prevention to our pain, but Jesus does provide a solution to it. So our God is not one who sees pain as something dirty, something to be ignored. God is not absent from our mess or our everyday lives, but rather our God is one who became incarnate, who became human and came into the mess of our lives and sits with us in that mess, and who weeps with us. And when we look at the Bible, or when we think of God, it is easy to think of God as a God of power and victory in the simple or the worldly sense. But when we read the Bible, what we see is a story of the God who is the God of the victim and of the marginalized and the downtrodden, and who is constantly working for that people. And he is a God who comes, and he and she is a God who comes into our pain. And it's interesting about the nature of the healing which Jesus offers here. So Jesus asks us to roll away the stone. And there's a funny scene in the Brick Testament where Jesus says, roll away the stone, and one of the characters calls out, why can't you do it? And I wonder why it is that we have to roll away our stone. And I want to use that as a kind of metaphor for healing. That there are times where we need to open ourselves up, and there might be wounds which are closed but which were never healed. And in order to bring in the kind of healing of forgiveness, we need to choose to roll away the stone and open up our wounds, which might be painful, but ultimately allows them to be healed. And I think it's good in the story that they say, but he's been dead 4 days, there'll be a nasty odor. And I want to put it to us that if we roll away the stones from our pain, there may well be a nasty odor. But actually, we live in a community of love, and I know that for the Swiss Church and for Covent Garden, community is something on our hearts, and we want to be there to live life with one another and to love one another. And I think that our God is a God that can deal with the mess, but also our community is one of love which can also deal with that mess. And I think this is something which is particularly on my heart, because this week I went back to the town that I did my master's in, and that year was by far the hardest year of my life. So you have 25 years and then you have that year. And it is qualitatively different and bad. And you can tell it's all healed, right? But as I got there, I was actually going back for a really happy reason. And I would say that I've probably been crying in worship for the last 18 months pretty much every week. And I haven't been able to figure out why. And as I got back to that city, I felt a lightness in me compared to 2 years ago. And when I got there, I felt God give an opportunity to roll away that stone and open the opportunity for healing. But it was interesting because I actually didn't want to. So that narrative of pain had become so ingrained in my life that actually there was something which I had to give up in order to roll it away and to allow something else into it. So I think that in order to bring healing, we need to roll away the stone. But when we do, we find that Jesus is the resurrection and the life and brings healing into that space. And we're going to look at more of that on the next slide. So like I said, all of the illustrations that we use this afternoon are from the Brick Testament, apart from this, which is Michelangelo's depictions of the three people on the cross. And the reason I chose this is I just thought the crucifixion is too beautiful for Lego, which either kind of wiser theologians or Lego enthusiasts can disagree with me on later, but I'm very happy to pick that up at the craft beer company. But it's Michelangelo on this slide. And for me, it's really significant that so all of the writers of the epistles, the letters that come after the gospel, talk about the cross as a place of forgiveness. That is unanimous. There's no doubt that there's something about the cross which brings about forgiveness. And there's also no doubt that the cross is the place of Jesus' ultimate pain. It's not only physical, it's social, as he's abandoned by his closest disciples. His best friend denies him three times. And it's also spiritual. Because on that cross, Jesus Christ, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, or my God, why have you forsaken me? There's a sense in which Jesus, who is fully God and fully human, also feels totally separated from God. And I want to suggest that that ultimate pain that Jesus experiences on the cross means that there is no spectrum on the human experience of pain which is then separate from God. Even the feeling of separation from God is covered by the love of God, which is maintained within the crucifixion. And we see that in the resurrection, because the crucifixion is not the final story, but rather there is a life of love which comes after that. And specifically, it's at Jesus's greatest point of pain that he says, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And there is a place that even in this pain, Jesus invites in forgiveness. And I want to suggest that as we can participate within Jesus's resurrection, so we can participate in the forgiveness within the pain that Jesus brings. And that this is a place where not only the separation that we mentioned at the beginning in the Garden of Eden between God and humanity is healed, but this is also the place where there is a kind of horizontal reconciliation between human beings. That in participating within Jesus in this moment, so we can also participate in that movement of forgiveness and get taken up by God in that. And the way that we do that is through rolling away the stone and inviting God into our pain. And in a moment, we're going to turn to look at what that means in practice. But just to say that I feel that there is a power of prayer here. Even more than narrative or the importance of telling a story, there is something about inviting God into that space which is healing and can bring about forgiveness. And I think that's just important to be said. So if we go to the next slide. So if this is our kind of conceptual framework, if we understand that there is something about separation between God and from one another that could cause pain, but this pain is kind of healed in some way by Jesus on the cross, which allows us to bring God into ourselves, to bring healing, but also then to bring forgiveness. Then practically, what are the applications of that? So like I said, the book which I find most helpful on this was called The Book of Forgiveness, which is written by Desmond and Mfo Tutu. Now, Desmond Tutu was the Archbishop of Cape Town during the apartheid regime, and he was a vocal critic of this. And he and his family, so Mfo is his daughter, and received death threats regularly as a result of this. And both of them, so Mfo is now also a member of the Anglican clergy, and both of them were involved in the Truth and Reconciliation Council, which really was pioneered post-apartheid to bring individual acts of reconciliation, but also to bring healing and forgiveness to a nation. So when they write about this, they're not only speaking on behalf of individuals, but they are speaking on behalf, so they're not only speaking as theologians, they are speaking as people who have walked this journey personally. And this is the framework that they give. So the two ways I think it's helpful to think about forgiveness is in terms of forgiving others, but also in terms of forgiving ourselves. Because I think sometimes the second can be the harder to do. But we'll start by thinking about forgiving others. And what I've essentially done is mapped the steps which Mfo and Desmond talk about onto the points that we talked about in the story of Lazarus. So the first is Jesus does not prevent our pain. And therefore, if we're talking about forgiving others, there's a need to tell our story of pain. There's a need to process it, just to tell the facts. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be done to the person who's hurt us. In fact, at the beginning, that can be really unhelpful. Sometimes we're not ready for that. But I would advise, or what Mfo and Desmond Tutu advise, is to find a trusted person. and to share it with them. And that could be a friend, it could be a parent, it could be someone in church, or it could be to God. But it's just a start by telling the facts and letting us, our brain, have the space and time to process that. Secondly, Jesus weeps with us. And that means we can name our hurt and spend time in our hurt. And there is no rush for this process. In fact, this is a process which can't be rushed. It must be done at its own pace. And we may go through several cycles of naming the hurt and telling the story, and naming the hurt and telling the story. But really, identifying this pain is one of the ways that allows us to then ask and invite God into that space. Next, we can choose to forgive. Because of what happened on the cross, because of the forgiveness and healing which Jesus offers, that's an opportunity for us. And finally, renewing or releasing the relationship. I think too often when we talk about forgiveness, there's a danger of thinking about forgiving as being akin to embracing the person who's hurting us and singing Kumbaya as we skip into the sunset with them. That is sometimes the case, and like that is fantastic when it is, but actually sometimes it is right and godly to release that relationship. I think especially if there's ever any danger to your safety, then that is absolutely the right thing to do. So there's a wisdom call, and we're going to look at some very practical steps and kind of how Christchurch can support with this journey, and we'll discuss that a bit more there, but I think there's a sense of we can discuss this with people and receive counsel on how best to do this. So from forgiving others to forgiving ourselves. So if we go on to the next slide. So equally, in seeking forgiveness, because Jesus does not prevent that pain, there is a sense that we need to admit that wrong. We need to admit our fallibility and come to terms with the fact that we have hurt someone. Not just self-forgiveness is not brushing it under the carpet, but it's staring in stark contrast at our own fallibility and flaws. And as we do that, we can then come to the person without self-defense. It's very different to sweep something under the carpet and say, oh, I wasn't in my right mind, or to say, I was selfish. And really allowing us to witness the anguish of someone else is an important part of that reconciliation. And as we do that, we know that Jesus weeps with the other person, but Jesus also weeps with us as Jesus engages with the pain that we have as causing someone else hurt. And part of that witnessing the anguish is also apologizing. So it's saying, I'm sorry, but more than that. So I would say that I'm sorry means that a change in behavior follows. To use a really trite example, if we apologize for never doing the washing up and then never do the washing up, then it's not an apology. Those words are empty. Apologizing for the washing up means that we then start to do the washing up. So actually, I think often in our society, and we can think that I'm sorry heals all things, but actually having a change of action and something to do in order to reconcile ourselves to someone is an important part of that. And finally, again, because Jesus is the life and the resurrection, we can seek someone's forgiveness. And again, just in the, as in when we're granting forgiveness, there's the option as to whether to reconcile that relationship or to release it. And finally, just some examples of how Christchurch London can help on this journey, because it is a journey and one that can't be rushed. So we have the STEPS program. STEPS is a 12-step program, which is fun to say, and helps us along the journey to be our best selves. So really, it looks to do the job of this series as well as to think through what does it mean to live in the peace of God and the fullness of ourselves. And seeking to either grant forgiveness or accept forgiveness could be something that you do along this journey with other people. Finally, we have a pastoral support team. So anyone on the welcome, myself, Liam, would be really happy to pass on details of the pastoral support team or the STEPS program. But these are ways in which, to the final point, we can walk this way as a community. Because none of us are meant to walk this journey by ourselves, but we are meant to walk this journey with other people in prayer and friendship and talking and dinners and craft beer. But we walk this journey together. And we'll just say some more on that on the final slide. So I think something that Enfo and Desmond Tutu talk about, which really struck me, was the way that we go through this process in community. And they say this: we feel shame in isolation. It can only be healed in community and in connection with others. Because we feel shame, we can be compassionate with the shame felt by others. Because we feel compassionate towards others, we then feel compassion for ourselves. When we feel self-compassion, we then can experience forgiveness for others. So we started by looking at the story of Cain and Abel, and there's a sense in which the pain that we the pain caused to Cain leads to the death of community. It leads to the death of the other. But instead, what's being suggested here is the pain that we have actually then allows us to connect with other people. And in forgiveness, it allows us to love those better. As we love other people better, so we love ourselves better and can learn to forgive ourselves. And this is the mystery of community and forgiveness and of Jesus' forgiveness that we have the choice of entering into. So the band could come back up now. So we're now going to finish with a time of worship, which is just an opportunity to set our hearts and minds on God. As we do that, I'm going to close in prayer and just ask for kind of God's presence to come and prompt us to seek or to grant forgiveness if we want. And the prayer team will be at the front at the end. And this is just to close by saying that, and to repeat that this is a journey we walk in community. We would love to pray with you. We would love to talk with you. And we would love to journey this with you.